Take your Bibles, if you would, Joshua chapter 16. And we're going to cover 16 and 17 tonight. I was tempted just to come tonight and say, hey, we're going to skip over to chapter 18, because all 16 and 17 is the division or the assignment of the inheritance to the tribe of Joseph. But as I thought about it, it wouldn't be a very good example, because I believe that every part of the Bible, even the begats that are over there in Chronicles, and even this passing out of the property and some of the things that surround it, God has he had a purpose for putting it in the book, and it would be irresponsible for me to just say, just go home and read it on your own, because I can't get any truth out of those two chapters to share with you in a Bible study. And so I attacked them the last few days, and I have some truths that I want to share with you from these two chapters. We won't take the time to read all the verses, but we will read some of them. But these two chapters do talk about the inheritance that Joshua gave the children of Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh. And so look at chapter 16, Joshua chapter 16. And the lot of the children of Joseph fell from Jordan by Jericho unto the water of Jericho on the east, the wilderness that goeth up from Jericho throughout Mount Bethel, and goeth out from Bethel to Luz, and passeth along unto the borders of Arki and Ataroth, and goeth down westward to the coast of Japhletah, unto the coast of Bethrahamon, the nether, and to Gezer, and the goings out thereof are at the sea. So the children of Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim took their inheritance. You recall that Joseph was the son of Rachel, Jacob's favorite wife. He was also Jacob's, because of that, he was Jacob's beloved son. Parents are supposed to love their kids all the same. Jacob didn't do that. He had a favorite. You remember he made Joseph a coat of many colors when he was a young man, and his other brothers were jealous, and sold him into Egypt. And because he was sold into Egypt, God used him to save his people from a time of famine. You remember he gathered up all the crops in the seven good years and was able to sell it, not only to the Egyptians, but to his own family in that time of famine, and told his brothers, when they tried to apologize later for selling him as a slave, he said, "You didn't send me, God sent me so that I could preserve our posterity by gathering up food to last for the time of famine." And so when we come here to chapter 16 and 17, and we see the part of land in the promised land that was given to the tribe of Joseph, we see that the portion for them, the inheritance for them, again, that was assigned to them by God, was in the very heart of the land of Canaan. It went from the Jordan River on the east to the Mediterranean Sea on the west, and so it encompassed the whole breadth of the land of Canaan. And it was the land that they got was a very fruitful land. It was a very productive land. And it's not described in detail as the land that was given to Judah in chapter 15. There are a few cities mentioned, but not a lot. Basically, as you read chapter 16 and 17, you find that the Bible just gives the boundaries. It gives the limits. It gives the borders, so to speak, of the land. And maybe that was because that Joshua was from this tribe. He was of the tribe of Ephraim. And so maybe they just left it up to him. You know, they had a council that was made up of different princes from all the tribes that oversaw the process. I mean, God controlled it. They cast lots for the inheritance, but God, as we talked about last week, controlled the lots. But maybe it was because that Joshua was from this tribe, and rather than come back to the big council, so to speak, they just left it up to him to divide up the cities among his own tribe. So in the last part, and there's only 10 verses in chapter 16, in verses 5 through 10, the borders of Ephraim are described. And if you tried to, I know I passed out a map last week, and that was somebody's best guess as to what it actually looked like, because many of the landmarks that are described are probably different today than they were in Joshua's day. Cities were destroyed, brooks dried up, rivers changed their courses, even mountains fell. And so we can't draw exact boundaries today. But again, God assigned this land. And so, but just notice verses 9 and 10. Just make a couple points from there before we move to chapter 17. In verse 9 it says, "And the separate cities for the children of Ephraim were among the inheritance of the children of Manasseh, all the cities with their villages." And so some of the cities that were given to Ephraim actually were in the part of the land that was given to Manasseh. And again, it just goes to show that first of all, these were from the same tribes, and they ought to have gotten along well enough so it didn't matter where the cities were. I mean, Ephraim and Manasseh were brothers, and if you trace their history, the sizes of their tribes varied. Okay, so let me just tell what I mean. In Numbers chapter 1, when Moses and Aaron numbered the people, at that time there were 32,200. In the tribe of Manasseh, and there were 40,500 in the tribe of Ephraim. So Ephraim was bigger, okay? When Moses and Eleazar numbered the people in Numbers 26, it reversed itself. Manasseh had 52,700, Ephraim had 32,500. Okay, so the numbers were reversed. And then in Deuteronomy chapter 33, when Moses was blessing the children of Israel before he was going to go up on Mount Nebo and see the promised land, he wasn't going to get to lead him in, he talked about the tribe of Joseph and said, and talked about the 10,000s of Ephraim and the thousands of Manasseh. And so, again, it switched again, where Ephraim became bigger than Manasseh. And so, when these cities were assigned, as Joshua assigned them, Ephraim had more need of the cities than Manasseh did. And so just God assigned them, even though they were in Manasseh's land, the cities were given to Ephraim, and God expected them to not have any trouble with that. God expected them to get along and take the land that was assigned to them and live together in peace. It also shows that God can build up and tear down families as he pleases. I mean, tribe of Judah was always the biggest, okay? And our Lord traces his ancestry to the tribe. He was a lion of the tribe of Judah. But if you go and compare the numbers, again, you see that some tribes increased in size and others decreased in size. And again, that was controlled by God. Look at verse 10. "And they drave not out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwelt among the Ephraimites until this day and serve under tribute." Now, God had told them, don't make any treaties with the people, drive them all out. Okay? And Joshua, he told Moses that, and Moses had repeated that instruction to Joshua, and Joshua told the people when they went into the promised land, no pacts, no treaties, don't get tied up with the Canaanites, because they will lead you away from me. They will lead you into idolatry. They'll lead you to worship false gods. So don't get tied up with them. But they didn't drive them out. And they put them under tribute. They said, well, we can make money from these people. They can be our servants. And they compromised what God told them to do for the gain of the world. And they put themselves in danger to be led away from God and be led to these false gods. Now, I want to say some things about that, but I want to wait till we get down to chapter 17, because the tribe of Manasseh did the same thing. And if we're not careful, we do the same thing today as Christians. We let the things of the world entice us, and we compromise, and we put ourselves in danger of letting the world draw us away from God. Okay, chapter 17, verse 1. There was also a lot for the tribe of Manasseh, for he was the firstborn of Joseph, to wit, from Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh, the father of Gilead, because he was a man of war, therefore he had Gilead and Bashan. And so Manasseh, remember, was divided in, their inheritance was divided in two parts. Half of the tribe that came from Machir, there in verse 1, had their inheritance east of Jordan with the tribes of Reuben and Gad. Okay? The other half of the tribe is going to have their inheritance on the west side of Jordan with the nine other tribes. Look down in verse 5. And there fell 10 portions to Manasseh besides the land of Gilead and Bashan, which were on the other side of Jordan. And so Manasseh had 7 sons. Okay? One of them got their inheritance on the east side of Jordan. Okay? That left 6 sons. Okay? One of those sons, in Joshua's day, had no male descendants. And so when the nation of Israel was still in the wilderness, before they came into the promised land, when Moses was still in charge, the daughters of this one son, okay, the daughters of this one son who had no sons after him, came to Moses and said, we think it's only right that when we get over to the land of Canaan and when the promised land is being passed out, because our father had no sons, that rather than not, for us to not have a portion, that you give his portion to us. Moses went to God. God said, they have a good point, a case, however you want to say it. And so when you get over to the promised land, give these girls their portion of the inheritance. Okay? So 7 sons, one got it to the east, left 6. So 5, we read here in verse 5, there were 10 portions. One each for the 5 sons that had male descendants. And then for this son who did not have a male descendant but had 5 daughters, each one of those got a portion. Now, their 5 portions equals one of those. This is deep math, so stay with me, okay? Their 5 portions equals one of those. But it was divided into 10 portions because these girls got an inheritance along with their brothers. Now, I want you to think about it. So here they were in the wilderness, okay? They could foresee what was going to happen. They knew the land was going to be divided. So before they got there, looking ahead to what was going to happen, in the wilderness, while Moses was still in charge, they went to him and made their request. Hey, our dad didn't have any boys. Why should his inheritance be done away with? Why not give it to us? And so, again, Moses went to God. God said, okay. And Moses told Joshua, when you get there, when you divide up the land, give these girls a part. Now, here's a good point. Here's something to think about. We're in the wilderness, okay? Again, you've heard me say, the people coming out of Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, salvation. In the wilderness, our time in the world. Crossing the Jordan River, going over to the land of Canaan, is us going to heaven, okay? So in the wilderness, which represents our time here on earth, as it paints the picture, while they were in the wilderness, they looked forward to what was going to happen in the land of Canaan, and they made preparation for it. It would have been a lot harder, probably almost impossible, for them to wait till they got to the land of Canaan and make their case to Joshua and said, hey, no brothers, give us our portion. They didn't do that. They did it while they were in the wilderness so that when they got to the promised land, Joshua knew what he had to do because Moses instructed him. we need to make our preparation for our land of Canaan while we are here in our wilderness, in this world. Because if we wait till we cross the Jordan River, we ain't going to the land of Canaan. We're going to the other place. We're going to hell. There is no chance. I can't remember who I was talking to Sunday night. Who, Brother Gerald, was it you? Somebody was talking to me. They had gone to a Catholic funeral. Don, was that you? Okay, it was Don. He's talking about Catholic funeral, and we were talking about purgatory. And he was saying, I just don't understand how people can believe that they can pay and get people out of purgatory into heaven. I don't find anything like that in this book. And Don made the point, he made a good point. He said, well, why would Jesus have to die? If all it takes is money, why would God have to send his son to die? Okay? So, again, once we cross the Jordan River, once we take our last breath, it is too late to prepare for eternity. We need to prepare for eternity, like Gene was testifying. And I'm surprised, Gene, when you quoted that verse that said, today is, he said, I'll do it tomorrow. And he said, you quoted, well, today is the day of salvation. And he said, I promise you I'll do it today. I'm surprised you didn't say, well, let me quote the rest of the verse. Now is the accepted time. Do it now while I'm here. Don't promise me you'll do it today. Do it now. And it's the same thing. Don't wait to make preparation for our land of Canaan, heaven, after you're in the Jordan River. It's too late then. Today's the day of salvation. Now is the accepted time. If you're here tonight and you're not saved, don't wait till tomorrow. God never promises us tomorrow. And surely don't wait until you're crossing the Jordan River, because it will be too late. Nobody can buy you out. Nobody can pay a price and change your destiny. Because if you die without Jesus Christ, you're headed for hell and you have no hope. No hope. Okay, look at verse 10 of, I'm sorry, look at, wait a minute. Look at verse 12 of chapter 17. Yet the children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites would dwell in that land. Yet it came to pass, when the children of Israel were waxen strong, that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. So they did the same thing as Ephraim. They put them to tribute. They said, hey, we can make money. These people can serve us. We can profit from these people. But again, they were disobeying God. They put themselves in danger of being drawn away from God, being drawn into idolatry. The things of the world look enticing. The things of the world look attractive. And if we're not careful, here's the attitude we take. Well, I can enjoy the good things of the world and it won't affect me. I'm a strong enough Christian. I'm rooted enough in my faith that I can mess around with the things of the world and it won't draw me down. It won't drag me down. I'm strong enough in my faith that I can handle it. And I'll just say that if you funk like that, watch it, because you are cruising for a bruising. You are putting yourself in harm's way. It will affect you. The world will affect us. And we think we can dabble in it, and we think we can get involved in it and enjoy the things of the world without them affecting us. It's not true. They will affect us. And they will drag us down. That's why God told the Israelites, don't make any treaties with these people. Don't make any pacts with them. Drive them out. And we look back and say, well, I mean, they cut wood for them. They drew water for them. They became their servants. Wasn't that good? No, it wasn't good. Because go over to the book of Judges if you want to see why it's not good and see the cycle that repeats itself over and over and over and over again. They start worshiping the gods of the land. God withdraws his blessing, puts them into captivity. They turn back to God. God sends a judge and rescues them. And then they turn again to a false god. And the cycle repeats itself 8 or 9 times in the book of Judges. They would have been a lot better off if they would have done what God said and driven out the Canaanites, just entirely wiped them out, made no pacts with them, made no treaties with them, so there'd be no false gods to serve. Say, preacher, that's good, but what does that mean to us today? Well, I'll remind you, God gave us the same instruction in the New Testament. He gave the same instructions to Christians in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, where he said, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness?" I remember a story in the Old Testament about the good king Jehoshaphat, when he went to help Ahab, the wicked king of Israel. And a prophet came out to meet him as he was coming back from being with Ahab. And the prophet said, "Look, you have no right to join up with this king." He basically said the same thing that it said in 2 Corinthians. What does light have to do with darkness? What does righteousness have to do with unrighteousness? You're in an unholy alliance. God's not going to bless it. Verse 15 of 2 Corinthians chapter 6. "And what concord had Christ with Belial, or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols?" We are the temple of God. The Holy Spirit lives inside of us. "What agreement have we with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." The same thing he told the Israelites. "I'll be your God. You'll be my people. But don't form an alliance with the Canaanites. Drive them all out. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." And so the same instruction that God gave the Israelites, he gives to us in the New Testament. He says, don't dabble in things of the world. Don't get involved in the things of the world. They may look enticing, and you may think that you can handle it because your faith is so strong. But I guarantee you, it will affect you. It'll drag you down. You don't put a good apple in a barrel of bad apples and expect the good apple to make the bad apples good. Doesn't work that way. You can have a barrel of good apples and put one bad apple in it, and sooner or later the whole barrel will be full of bad apples. So again, we look at back at the instructions that God gave the Israelites and say, man, what a dumb people. Why didn't they just do what God said? They would have been a whole lot better off. Well, why don't we look in the mirror and say the same thing to ourselves? Why don't we just do what God says? We'd be a whole lot better off. And so, watch who you run with. Watch who you get entangled with, entwined with. Watch who you pick for friends. Because pretty soon you'll be just like them. Here's my advice. Find somebody that's going to pull you up. Find somebody that's going to get you closer to God. Find somebody that's going to cause you to read your Bible more. Find somebody that's going to cause you to pray more. Find somebody that's going to get you to go to church more. Hang around them. Let them influence you. All right, look down at verse 14. "And the children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, Why hast thou given me but one lot and one portion to inherit, seeing I am a great people, for as much as the Lord has blessed me hitherto?" So here comes Ephraim and Manasseh, both of them. And they go to Joshua. And they said, why have you only given us one lot? Why just one portion? And maybe they thought that since Joshua was part of their tribe, that he might show them some special consideration. Hey, this is one of our cousins. You know, if we go to him and say, hey, we want a little bit more, maybe he'll use his position of leadership to get us a little bit more than this one lot. But I'm happy to tell you, there is no indication that Joshua used his position of leadership to take anything for himself, for his family, or for his tribe. I was with the hospital yesterday with Harry when Marlene was going through her procedure, and some of their friends from their old church came in, and they made mention that the organization, I think it was called Angel Food, it was an organization that bought food in bulk and then sold it to needy families for a, you know, economical price. They were mentioning that that organization has gone bankrupt, gone out of business. And I thought to myself, well, yeah, I haven't seen the signs around. Some of the churches I passed used to have signs up that, you know, people could go and place an order and buy the food. And so, you know, I was talking to Harry about something else. They were talking to Kelly. And so I said, hang on, Harry, I want to hear this. They said, yeah, it went bankrupt because those people that were running it started skimming off money from the organization, and as a result couldn't pay the bills and went into bankruptcy. And I told you a couple weeks ago, remind me, I told you a couple weeks ago about that town in Illinois, Zion, Illinois, that was it was built and started to be a town that revolved around the church. Everything revolved around the church, and it went well for a few years until the pastor started skimming off money from the church, thinking that, you know, because he was a leader, he had a special right to enjoy something. He and his family that they should enjoy some special privilege. And I was just reminded again yesterday that every organization needs to build safeguards in, some checks and balances, so that, you know, it is run with integrity, so that leadership has no chance to do that. And, you know, I'm glad at this place we have that system in place. I mean, I couldn't skim if I wanted to. I don't want to, but I couldn't if I wanted to, because we do have a series of checks and balances in place to prevent that. And so Joshua, again, he said, I don't care if you're my cousins or not. You know, you're not getting any more. You got one lot, and that's it. And they come to him, and they said, hey, we're a great people. God's blessed us, and he's going to continue to bless us, and one lot isn't going to be enough. Pretty soon, what we have is going to limit God. And sometimes we get, because we don't know what the future holds and we're afraid of the future and we worry about tomorrow, and it causes us not to be thankful for what God has done for us and what God is doing for us. Sometimes we get so worried that, you know, yeah, we're making it good today because God's blessing it, but what's going to happen tomorrow? And we get our eyes on tomorrow, and we take our eyes off today, and we take our eyes off what God's doing for us today, and we start worrying about tomorrow, and we forget to thank him for what he's doing for us today. And I'll give you the cure for that problem. Focus on today and what God's doing for you today, and know that if he's going to do it for you today, he will do it for you tomorrow. We don't need to worry about tomorrow, because same God that takes care of us today will take care of us tomorrow. Now look at verse 15. And Joshua answered them, said, if thou be a great people, then get thee up to the wood country and cut down for thyself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the giants, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee. He said, look, if you're really a great people, then go to the wood country and cut it down. Go to the lands of giants and take it, and you'll have plenty of room. Just go get it. Look at verse 16. And the children of Joseph said, the hill is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites that dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both they who are at Bethshanah and her towns, and they who are of the valley of Jezreel. The people came back to him when he said this and said, hey, the enemy that lives in the mountains and the woods, they're a fierce enemy. They have chariots of iron. And what they were talking about, they'd have these chariots that had long scythes on them. sharp blades on their wheels, and they would drive these chariots into the armies of the enemy and cut them down just like a crop. I mean, these things would spin, the knives would spin. They'd drive them into the soldiers and just cut them down. And so the tribe of Joseph was saying, hey, give us a land, give us some land that doesn't have such a fierce enemy. Give us a land that's maybe the enemy's already been defeated. And what they were saying is, we want the blessings of God, but we don't want to go through the trials that sometimes we have to go through to get them. And if we're not careful, we have the same attitude. We want Paul's power, but we don't want the thorn in the flesh. We want God to heal our land, but we don't want to humble ourselves and pray and seek his face and turn from our wicked ways. We just want him to heal our land. We just want him to bless us. We want his reward, but we don't want to work for that reward. And here's what Joshua says. It doesn't work that way. If you want God to bless, if you want his reward, then you got to do what he says. Notice what he says in 17. And Joshua spake unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, thou art a great people, and have great power. Thou shalt not have only one lot only, but the mountain shall be thine, for it is wood, and thou shalt cut it down. And the outgoings of it shall be thine, for thou shalt drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots, and though they be strong. Joshua was saying, hey, I'll give you more, but I ain't going to just give it to you. You got to work for it. You got to go fight for it. You got to go take it. But remember, God's with you. So just trust him. Just like you've trusted him up to this point, trust him. Get into the fight. Go take it. So let me close with this thought. God has blessed our land. I think the United States of America is the best place to live in the whole world. And it's because of the blessings of God. Now, many of us tonight want that blessing again. We want God to put his hand back on our nation, but we want it without paying the price that our parents and our grandparents paid for it. We want God to bless, but we don't want to stand for right. We want him to bless, but we don't want to say no to anybody. And we don't want to offend anybody. And we want to be Sunday morning Christians. I know I'm preaching to the Wednesday night crowd, so I can say this. But we want to be Sunday morning Christians, come to church on Sunday morning, not have to come back on Sunday night or Wednesday night. We want to sing sweet 5 minutes of prayer and not sweet hours of prayer. We want God to bless, but are we willing to pay the price? Are we willing to pay the same price that our forefathers, our grandparents, and our parents paid to get the blessings of God? If we're not careful, we'll take the same attitudes that the tribe of Joseph did. Yes, God, we want your blessings, but we're not willing to pay the price. Can't you just bless us? And God said, don't work that way. There's a verse over in the New Testament that says, you don't work, you don't eat. Now, today's world don't like to hear that. You don't work, you don't eat. But that's what God says. I want to bless you. I want to bless you. But I'm looking for somebody that's willing to pay the price for those blessings. And we need to hear what Joshua said to the tribe of Joseph. Yeah, God will bless you if you work, if you pray, if you go fight. He'll bless you. Same's true today. Thanks for being here tonight. Let's stand, have a word of prayer. Be dismissed.